Welcome to TN Tales, the podcast where your hosts scour the internet for the greatest pitches, oddest stories, and gems of story crafting amongst history. So make sure to grab your tea, follow the podcast, and get ready for some tales with your hosts, Renee Sky and Bloody Drongo.
All right, well, welcome back to episode 3 of Tea and Tales with Renee Sky and myself, Bloody Drongo. How are you, Ren?
I'm good. I'm super glad that you're now the main host of this podcast because it gives me an opportunity to just kind of sit here and make like funny arm movements at you to be like, I'm helping you co-host this segment. So I'm feeling good. How about you? What's been going on your end?
I for one, am glad that I have you here to make funny arm movements because this is just for my benefit because this is not yet in video format. So
I was literally just thinking that. I was thinking like maybe we need to do like a video format kind of thing because there's been a lot of times when we've had to describe each other's facial expressions to the listening audience. So if maybe we leave this as like our last audio only podcast and then if we get enough hubbub surrounding this episode's release of people being like, yeah, we'd watch video of you guys sitting in front of your mics. Yeah. Then maybe we do it. Yeah.
So there you go. You, listeners, cause a hubbub if you would like this to be in video format as well as audio. And if this episode remains hubbubless, it will remain videoless. So, and also low key, I actually love hubbubless as a word. That was very fun to say.
That's a word now. I run a publishing company. I can rule the words. Hubbubless is now a word. Congratulations.
We need to get you a little gavel so that whenever you make a ruling, an editor's ruling, you can like whack the gavel and be like, you know.
Sustained, I do that so overruled. Regularly as well. I have nothing. There we go. I don't know if that came through.
Just, no. I'll take your word for it, though. I saw the arm movement, but nobody else did, so. But yes, I
that's
have
That's why
been...
we need the hubbub, sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. That's why we need the hubbub. Hopefully, we won't be hubbubless. But yes, I have been very well. I've been very busy. It has been about how long has it been since the last episode? It's been a little while.
3 months.
It's just four months since
four
January.
4 months? 4 months? Oh, we're in May.
We are in May, yeah. I regret to inform you that we are in May.
Oh, no.
I don't know where the year has gone, but the year has passed us by. But we are doing another episode, finally. In case you missed the last episode, in the last one, we both were issued the homework of reading the book Death Warmed Over, which was a supernatural... crime noir sort of book, and Ren right now is looking around guiltily as if that she hasn't completed the homework in the last 4 months since the last episode, which would be very irresponsible of her, but you know, we'll hear from her very shortly. We also talked about The Witcher, Blood Awakening. Ren talked about One of Us is Lying and the theory around unreliable narrators. Ren also talked about the Sandman graphic novel. And we also compared notes about being content creators and coming into the January lull. And I think that'll be an interesting one to revisit and kind of see whether there has been any pickup as the year has progressed. And also Ren has been adventuring on TikTok as well. That was one of the things that we talked about at the time. So Ren, why don't we start with revisiting the first agenda item on there? Tell me about your experience reading Death Warmed Over, which was a reading assignment from previous episode. What did you think?
It was really good. It surprised me with the depths of the themes that the author was able to explore within such a genre. You go into it thinking it's going to be the supernatural kind of comedy. And in fact, it actually manages to touch on quite a few subjects that I thought were handled really, really well. What about you? What do you think? I didn't read it. I'm so sorry. I've recently moved house and with everything that's been going on, it's been an absolute nightmare. So I have not, unfortunately, read it yet. Kevin J. Anderson, I'm so sorry, sir. I hope I managed to at least touch on a few things that were truthful there.
Well, you certainly said some words.
I did. It was very hubbubless of me.
For those of you listening at home, Ren's guilty expression throughout this whole segment has been very endearing, and I have enjoyed it a lot. The book itself, I did actually read it for any listeners, and I did read it. I did actually read it fairly soon after the previous episode, so...
Have you forgotten everything?
Believe it or not. Sorry?
Have you forgotten everything?
Well, that's the thing, is like, it's now been a long enough period of time where I've probably actually forgotten some of my stuff, and I did take some notes at the time, but I don't know where my notes have gone. So
we'll get better at doing this, I promise.
Yeah, we will improve. This has been a learning exercise, if nothing else. I do remember a few key points, and number one was it was a little bit better than I was expecting it to be. Like, it's not really usually my sort of genre, like the crime, true crime noir sort of, you know, detective story. I usually find it a little bit kind of cliche and doesn't interest me that much, but the overall, I remember being overall like, oh, this is actually better than I expected it was going to be. And it does play on, because it is a parody or a comedy parody, it does play on those kind of cliches quite heavily, but in a way that is amusing. The one thing I didn't like about it, though, was the writing as it refers to female characters. I felt like it slipped into a lot of very kind of like typical cliches about male writers not writing female characters very well. And where the male protagonist is always the center of every female character's desire. And it was just, I found that really awkward, and kind of like, since I've been kind of made aware of it, I have noticed it more. And I don't know whether if before I was aware of this as a kind of a thing that I would have noticed it as much, but it definitely did get, I definitely did notice it, and it did bother me. And I was just like, It just makes the characters very two-dimensional, and it doesn't actually give them room to be their own character and be interesting in their own right. It's always framed from the perspective of what do they think about the main character? How do their actions impact the main character? And it's just not very, very interesting in that respect. So that was one thing that I liked and one thing that I didn't like about it.
Well, that is... I'm glad to hear that it was more enjoyable than you thought it was going to be. And I'm really curious with what you said about it's been pointed out to you about the whole men writing women cliche, and wondering if you would have noticed that before it was pointed out. Because once you see it, you can't really unsee it. It's one of those really annoying tropes in writing. So I will read it, definitely. I will.
Okay.
I will. And I'll get back to you because I'm really interested with stuff like that, because it's, unfortunately, it's quite prevalent, and it's something I'm really conscious of when I work with my authors. And it's also something I'm conscious of in my writing as well, because it's really, really tempting sometimes to just kind of devolve characters to only their sexuality, because that's very interesting to a lot of readers. And so, I mean, like, look at what's been hitting our bestseller lists since 2012. It's been like 50 Shades of Grey and then all like the dark eroticas that came after. It's because, unfortunately, like, the old adage is that sex sells, and so putting more of that in your book is usually guaranteed a few more sales than if it is completely romanceless, because the amount of romance readers versus the amount of non-romance readers, there's no competition, and you definitely want to be pandering to the biggest audience that's going to buy your books. So very interesting to hear, but there's a right way and there's a wrong way.
I'll be keen to compare notes. I think after I finished reading it, I said to you, I won't tell you any of my thoughts yet, but I'm really excited to hear your thoughts. And that was one of the things that I was particularly keen to hear your insights on, was around, you know, how different characters are written and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think that's a pretty interesting topic to kind of dig into and talk about in general.
How long is it again?
Uh, I don't remember exactly how long it is. I've finished it in a afternoon / evening, so it's not terribly long.
Mm-hmm. Are you okay? My door just opened by itself. I'm so sorry. I'm being haunted. Ugh! Oh no! That was terrifying. Okay, I apologize. Sorry, can you just repeat when you said the thing about all the stuff?
Okay, all right. Are you focused? Are you in the room?
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right. The ghost is always also in the room. Yeah, no, I was saying, I don't remember what I was saying. It doesn't matter. That's okay.
I'm so we'll sorry. I'm so sorry. Derail your train of thought. I thought my cousin was trying to like open the door to be like, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
And I've just messaged him. I'm doing a podcast. Orbit. Poor thing's going to get blamed for the ghosts in the house now.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so I do apologize for not reading our monthly read, and I will get to it. And I was asking how long it was. That was the last thing I asked you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I don't remember exactly how long it was off the top of my head. I do know I finished it in an afternoon / evening, so it's not terribly long.
Okay. That makes it very appealing to me.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty consumable. Mm. And I think it maybe it's also a commentary that it also didn't stick with me that hard after it, that maybe it's not like a 10 out of 10 read. But I think if you do enjoy those sorts of crime noir books, you'll probably find some novelty in the fact that it's kind of in a supernatural undead sort of setting.
Okay. Okay. So a bit of a popcorn read.
Yeah. 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 I certainly don't think it's something that you should be at all going into expecting to take particularly seriously.
So everything I said at the start when I was just kind of like ad-libbing was just completely wrong.
Like I said, you certainly said some words. So that was good enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Okay, yeah. I appreciate it. I want to move on to our next topic, which is Solasta. You've put this on our agenda. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, so I've been playing a lot of Solasta recently because I've been desperately craving TTRPG gameplay. It's been a long time since I last did a D&D session or a Pathfinder session. And I thought, I spent some time playing Solasta and it really was causing me to contemplate what makes character writing in RPGs good. And I thought that would be an interesting topic because I know you're a TTRPG fan as well, and I'd love to get your thoughts on what actually makes a good character and an enjoyable character to play and also DM for as well, because I know you have done some DMing as well. And for me, the whole trigger for this was in Solasta. It even though it has all of the mechanics of a D&D game, the narrative and the character narratives are just so unbelievably shallow that I wanted to really enjoy it and get sucked in, but I just found myself constantly just being underwhelmed by each progressive point that elapsed to the point where now I've stopped playing Solasta.
When you say shallow, can you expand on that a bit?
So in particular with Solasta, one of the things that I think is really, really lackluster is the fact that in the game world, you can find little clues and notes that will give you a little bit of extra information about the world or the characters that you might be interacting with. For example, there was a recent story beat where I found myself in a dungeon trying to get into a magical tower and going through the sewers and then finding like an underground zombified army that was being controlled by a lady who was trying to use this army to retake the castle because her the love of her life was being kept held in the castle under the control of another woman who was, trying to keep him to herself or, keep his powers to herself. And you can find some letters that actually explains this. and you can find that information out ahead of time and find out who these people are. But then when it comes to actually interacting with the characters in the game and having conversations and asking them questions, none of that learned information that you gain through those little tidbits can be applied in any meaningful way and is actually ignored by the dialogue options, which I think is really poor from a story building perspective. Like, it would almost be better off if those things didn't exist, so there wasn't this disconnect with what I know as the player and what my characters know in their interactions.
Absolutely. And I'm going to counter that with, I've been playing a lot of Divinity Original Sin 2 lately. And I was going to say, those little notes and letters and stuff that you'd find around the place, they do come into play in DOS as dialogue options. So that's very interesting to me that they've taken the time to put those little memos and shit in the game. And then it's not, you're not rewarded for going around and learning more about the world. As a DM, I would be rewarding the players for showing interests and investigation skills and basically panache and initiative. When my players think outside the box and they actually try some critical thinking methods and they try to work their way around a problem instead of just running headlong at it and trying to hit it with a sword, I will reward that because you want to encourage curiosity, basically. Yeah. So very, very interesting to hear you say that, and a little disappointing as well in terms of storytelling.
Yeah, I think it's actually an interesting comparison that you drew there with the parallel to Divinity Original Sin 2, because that is a game that I absolutely adore. I've played it many, many times through, and I just think it is absolutely, at the moment, probably one of the gold standard games when it comes to D&D RPG inspired sort of game systems. And it is just so wonderfully interwoven with each other and all the different aspects and the ability to leverage stuff, and the voice acting as well is just absolutely
Acting is brilliant. I was very excited to find the voice actress who does the female Inquisitor from Dragon Age Inquisition is also one of the main voice actresses in Divinity as well. So I was like, I was fangirling. I'm so sorry I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but she is one of my favorite voice actresses, ironically. And I love the way that she does her work. It's just bringing such another layer of enjoyment to the game for me. This is my first ever foray into the Divinity universe, and I am flabbergasted and astonished at how packed the world is. There is so much in this game that the amount of work just blows my mind. All the little dialogue options, all the different things you can do. At some points it's become kind of crippling because it's like, I've got so much free choice that I could do anything, and then I don't know how that's going to change the game. So you're like Googling stuff to make sure you're not going to like break the game or break a quest line later on, and eventually you just got to get away from that and be like, no, I just have to act how my character would and trust the system and be curious. So it's been a real learning curve for me. Not usually my type of game at all, weirdly enough.
Oh, really?
Not at all, no. And I can't even tell you really why. It's just never really drawn me in before. Mm. But the main thing that got me interested in it at first was the music and the art style.
Well, there you go. So when you're playing these sorts of games, are you somebody, like, I personally find that I struggle with balancing the gamer in me, in knowing that I want to investigate every nook and cranny and worry about, am I making the most optimal decision here? And then balancing the RPG player in me and going, okay, is this what my character would do? Am I, you know, adhering to a narrative that makes sense for me to follow, as opposed to trying to chase optimal gameplay? Mm. Like, is that something that you've kind of battled with at all throughout this venture? No,
not at all. I deliberately, in previous D&D games where I've been lucky enough to be a player, I've deliberately hamstrung my character and given her basically debuffs because I find the story elements and the character elements much, much more interesting to play just that to me is what I enjoy. I don't enjoy being completely overpowered or, you know, like strategizing. I've actually gotten into a bit of trouble in combat with Divinity because I would just like headbutt whatever in my way, and then it sometimes goes very badly for me, and then I get frustrated and I'm like, I actually need to think about this very tactically, which is not, I don't play with tactics, which is ironic considering that I just hosted Tacticon, but and tactics and strategy games is like a big part of my gaming background. But when it comes to playing a character, when it comes to playing RPGs or TTRPGs, I am fully invested in that character, and mm-hmm. I prefer to play them as a person rather than a construct in a game.
For sure. Yep. Totally get what you mean.
So I hope that answers.
I've also just DM'd you a name. Not going to say who it is, but low-key, somebody that followed me on Twitch recently. And I don't know, they are a voice actor from the Divinity game.
No way. Are you actually having me on right now?
No, I'm 100% serious.
Is it actually her?
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. Britt, you've made it.
I know. I saw that come through and I was just like, oh my God.
Well, my heart rate just spiked. I'm in the triple digits. Oh my God, that's amazing.
I know, right?
I'm going to just give her a sneaky follow. There we go. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm fangirling by proxy. I apologize. That's so exciting. Oh my goodness.
And then when I told a bunch of people that I know IRL, I was like, oh, low-key, this person followed me on Twitch the other day. They were just like, who? They don't care.
That's why you need other creators, because I'm just sitting here like... Yeah,
now I have the validation that I crave from that moment from you. Thank you.
Honestly, if no matter what happens for the rest of this year, you made it, dude. Exactly. Absolute goals. Oh my God, sorry.
So with the... with your... I guess the way that you talk about playing your characters in game, I think it probably does give a bit of an insight into my next question, was when you're actually sitting down and playing a character in a game, what do you, in an actual physical setting or a, you know, an online setting, TTRPG wise, what sort of characters do you find most enjoyable to play or DM for? Like, what kind of style player are you?
Oh, I love taking broken characters and making them whole, and I'm going to try not to look into that too much in terms of my own psyche, but I really like taking flawed people or people that have been through, or characters that have been through extreme trauma or background events, and basically working within a story arc for them to overcome that, and to go a little bit into the psyche. I think that is kind of, it mirrors my own journey with chronic depression and stuff like that. It's starting from the bottom, now we're here kind of vibes.
Sure.
And I just find that really, really interesting. And I think at the core of every good character development arc, there is that battle to overcome. And that's what we all aspire to be like. That's what we try to relate to. And that is, I think, in essence, the nature of the human spirit.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think for me as well, like my approach in playing a TTRPG is always from the perspective that I want to immerse myself in the role-playing aspect first and foremost. I'm not somebody that is, you know, I enjoy, you know, the combat aspects and that kind of thing, but I always, you know, the part that I really personally enjoy is the actual role-playing. That's the part that's really has a lot of value for me. And from that perspective, I think it's way more interesting to role play a character who has some flaw. I don't think I'm quite as focused as you are on in terms of like trying to, you know, take something broken and make it whole, as you put it. But for me, I think like having some kind of character flaw just allows for a lot more interesting interactions and also interesting ways to frame different scenarios. And that will allow you to then carry that over to how you interact with the DM and the other players at the table and open things up to, you know, different experiences, which I think is just really invigorating and really fun. So I'm definitely one of those annoying players that does bother some DMs that will choose a suboptimal character class and traits and, you know, paths and things like that. I'm not a power gamer at all. And often I will go out of my way to make myself less powerful for narrative's sake. And I know that bothers some people, but, you know, for the people that relate to what I'm saying and are picking it up, they'll appreciate it. And
I am exactly the same. Yeah. My last character was a wizard build, and there was a mechanic in the game where at any point during the day, the DM could roll a D100, I think it was, and there was a certain set of numbers that if I was trying to cast a spell and he rolled that number, he could negate it just like that, because she was just bad at magic. Wow. She was a wizard who was just terrible at magic. And it was like when I was building the character, I was like, yeah, this is going to be amazing. Oh my God, this is so juicy for the character backstory. And then he did it to me once in combat and on a critical spell. And I threw something at the DM for the first time in my life. Just a pen across the table. I was like, I gave you the mechanic, but you didn't have to use it. You didn't have to use it then. Okay. On the flip side of that, I currently have a metagamer at my table. Not a metagamer, a power gamer at my table. I have a min-maxer. Okay. And Lord witness me, I've never been so tested in my entire life. There's also been a pen incident.
It's an interesting challenge as a DM to be able to kind of balance different preferences for playstyle, especially when there is, like, in my personal experience with power gamers, their desire to kind of min-max their experience or min-max the way they go about playing the game can be quite forceful in terms of how they think that the rest of the game should progress. Is that, like, something that you find yourself kind of planning around? Sorry, to clarify as well, like, are you a player or are you a DM?
I'm a DM. I've recently started DMing a group for my home game. So every Friday night I have my group of four come over. We're hoping to expand the table. So if you ever wanna fly up to Brisbane and you feel like rolling some dice on an actual table, that's what we do every Friday. So,
very cool.
As a DM, I am struggling with it because he's also like a little bit of a rules lawyer as well, whereas I'm more off the cuff making the decision kind of like in the snap, like, you know, in the moment to keep the gameplay flowing and just using my best judgment for what I think is going to be beneficial and fair. And then I get hit with the, well, actually, according to the PHB, it's X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, oh my God, rocks fall and just you die. Isn't that amazing? Oh boy,
that is rough. That is really hard to deal with. Like,
bless his cotton socks. He's one of my best friends. It's Wallace, just for full clarification, so that people who listen to this podcast can go and annoy him. Because he'll go, I'm not a min-maxer. I'm just playing the class properly. He's multi-classed a rogue and a wizard so that he can have rogue elements so that I can't hit his wizard. And I'm like, that's the point of a wizard, is that you are squishy. You can't have the buff without the debuff.
Oh, dear.
So that's my struggle. Yeah. And I'm having to... It changes the way that I plan encounters, and it changes the way that I do combat and stuff, because he's kind of built a very well-rounded character. So he's very hard to hit. That being said, they did get into a bit of a battle royale at the end of one of the last sessions, and he did just get flattened by the cleric. So now I'm like, okay, I'm taking notes over here. I'm like, clerics everywhere. Got it.
Gotcha. Mm. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's an interesting challenge because you've got to, you know, you want to always be moving the story forward. And I think it's really difficult when you have, as a DM, to have players kind of be like, well, actually, that's not how that works. Like, that would be something, like, personally, if that happened to me, I'll be like, after the game, like, look, listen, this game isn't about following the rules. The player's handbook and the, you know, the DM guide and everything like that. At the start of the book, it says these are guidelines. The DM does whatever they want. You know, this is the game. You know, if it doesn't make sense for some reason, make your case, but don't rules lawyer me because that bothers me, because I'm definitely as well, like, somebody who's like rule of cool. And, you know, if it's something that the player... you know, is being quite clever about or being ingenious, and it makes sense from a rational perspective, even if it's not in the rules, you know, let them roll for it. Yeah. Like, let them play around it. Like, I love rewarding kind of out of the box thinking, even if it's not you know, strictly allowed within the game rules.
And we've circled back to the original issue, which is that your curiosity and thinking out of the box was not rewarded within Celesta. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I'm somebody who values that highly, as we've kind of, you know, dug into.
So I can absolutely see why that would damage your gameplay experience of it. This is a really interesting topic. Oh my goodness. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah. I thought it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, D&D storytelling, TTRPG storytelling, it's always been an interest of mine because I've had so much experience with it over the last 5 years I've been playing D&D for now. Mm-hmm. And in that time, I remember when I first started DMing, I DM'd on a weekly basis for 18 months straight. And our group size was eventually 8. And it taught me so much in terms of story crafting and character development. One of my favorite ever sessions was where I barely DM'd at all, because all of this RP that had been brewing for 6 months IRL suddenly mm-hmm. came to a head. And it was, I'll try and give the TLDR of this story, but basically one of our characters was a prince who'd run away from his responsibilities, you know, tale as old as time. His girlfriend, his in real life girlfriend, had asked if she could join the table. And I said, yeah. And she was like, I need some help building a character. I've never built a character before. And I said, yeah, I can help you with that. How good are you at keeping secrets? Because I have an idea for your backstory. You don't have to go along with it. But what if you were the jilted fiance of this prince? And we gave her a high enough charisma score so she could lie about it if anyone asked about it. No one in the group batted an eyelid at her background. And so for 6 months, this basically jilted fiance had joined the group and been following them around, and he'd had no idea. The character nor the player had any idea what she was cooking up. And she played it so well. This was her first ever game, and she would drop hints of, he'd say something about his background, which was a clear lie, and she would respond by folding her arms and not saying anything, but clearly being annoyed. And he would just never pick up on it, never follow up on it. And then it all came to a head when they were all sitting around a campfire, and the acting and the role play at the table and the dawning realization on his face as she is shouting at him across the table, you left me behind, you abandoned me. For this, for what? What are you even doing here? And watching him kind of go, oh, they didn't. And then he's just looked at me, and I'm in my hoodie. I've got my hoodie up to my face, so I'm not giving anything away. And I'm just like, I'm not helping you here, bro. I'm not helping you here, because this is the most magical thing I've ever seen. It was so good. And a thing that I like to think about with D&D is it's that it's shared storytelling, right? We all live roughly in the same space in our head when we're telling the stories. It's improvisation. It's that kind of thing. And so you create these shared memories that never actually really happened. So I can talk to anyone that was at that table, and I'll be like, wow, you guys remember that night when like she confronted him about the marriage? And they'll go, yeah, that was wild. Like, we're just sitting around this campfire in the mountains, and it's like a memory that actually happened. But it didn't. And that's the beauty of really good storytelling, of really good character development, is that it's just so beautiful to watch when it unfolds properly. And it's just so amazing. That's one of my treasured memories as a DM. And I haven't had much top it since then. Plus, when...
I mean, that sounds like it'd be tough to beat, honestly.
The atmosphere, like, I'm a bit dramatic when I DM. Would you believe that? And so
no, I would never believe that.
So I had like colored lights and stuff. So whenever they were sitting around a campfire, the lights would be down really low, and there'd be like a flicker to the light, so it looks like they were sitting around like firelight. And I would only do that if they didn't have to check their character sheets for anything, because it sucks to try and read print in.
sure.
Yeah. So I had that all down. We had some like nice, like very like low key background music that was just perfect. Like it had been scored perfectly for this conversation. And it just wrapped up with watching the rest of the group, who also didn't know, watching this happen to their friend from this new friend. And then you could see them trying to decide allegiances, because she'd made very good friends with them. And they're like, but he lied to us, and he lied to you. And just watching the chaos bomb that this lobbed in, I was like, boy, this was worth the 6 month build up. Also, I got to eat so many snacks because they were all RPing. I didn't have to do anything. I finally got to eat for once. That's a danger of being the DM. I'm sure there are others that agree with me, is you never get to eat.
That is, definitely. I think that is a really good point though, and that the, you know, the true essence of how you know, if you are somebody who really enjoys like role playing aspect and the narrative aspect, as opposed to kind of the mechanical combat side of D&D or, you know, Pathfinder or whatever TTRPG it is that it is an exercise in collaborative storytelling. And I think that's a really special thing. And I think it's also a really underrated aspect of storytelling. And I think if you asked, you know, 100 people, you know, name the different methods of storytelling, I don't think that there would be a lot of people that would immediately go, oh yeah, definitely, you know, TTRPG or roleplay or something like that, you know. But I think it's absolutely up there as, you know, definitely in terms of like creating shared experiences, way more impactful than, you know, reading an average book or something like that. Like that bond and, you know, the experiences that you get to have like in the moment. I think that's always one of the really hard things is describing a really cool moment in a TTRPG game and being able to convey just how cool and impactful it was, because it's never quite the same.
No.
Regaling after the fact.
I'm so conscious of, like, I have so many stories from my table and I'm like, these are great for myself and for anyone else that was at that table. For anyone else, I have to work really, really hard to kind of get across why it was so awesome and why it was so good, because it's like telling a story about, I know, something you did with your friends. Like, sometimes you've really got to work to make it relatable to people that weren't there, beyond them going, oh, that's interesting. Wow, that's crazy. Like, oh,
okay. So why did you take that couch down to the beach?
Yeah.
Why was that funny?
Yeah. I've straight up had someone that I was seeing last year be like, I don't care about D&D stories. Don't tell me your D&D stories. I don't give a shit. And I was like,
that is a red flag if I ever heard one, not going to lie.
It damaged things, I'll tell you that. I was like, well, I understand they're not the most fun to hear, but I've never had a blanket ban put on me before for something that I literally have tattooed onto my body. That was
That's rough.
Yeah. That did not go down a treat, I'll tell you that. But,
oh, dear.
I was going to mention the D&D movie. I know it's not on our agenda, but I'd love to talk about that if we could, because it slots into this conversation.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm not going to lie. I have not watched it.
You need to go and see it. I'm not going to spoil it. But I will say I went to see it with Wallace, my problem player, unfortunately also my best friend. He doesn't listen to these, so I can say whatever I want about him. and I went to see it with him. And a little bit of the movie is set in a portion of Faerun that our campaign was set in.
Oh.
The opening couple of scenes, like I'm talking like a couple of shots of an icy landscape. He grabs me by the wrist so tightly that I'm like, eh. And I look at him and he's got tears in his eyes and he's like, is this the Icewind Dale? And I said, yeah, it is the Icewind Dale. And then he's just like freaking out because, and then for the rest of the movie, like where it moved through some locations, I don't know if I just done my research really well or if all the resources are just really consistent, but what I described, we saw on a movie screen and I was like, this is wild. This is like seeing places that we had this like, you know, shared hallucination or whatever you want to call collaborative storytelling. And here it is on the screen and I did a really good job of portraying this and he's just sitting freaking out. And it was really, really kind of, I don't think I could have ever expected that experience to happen because, frankly, did we ever expect to get another D&D movie and did we ever expect it to be any good?
Yeah. Well, all right. Okay, so maybe that'll be my homework to take away with me is to go and watch the D&D movie and then we can talk about this in the next episode. Yes. I think that'd be a fun thing to
go
revisit.
And see it while it's in cinemas because it's just worthy of the big screen.
Okay. Mm. Oh, that's a strong recommendation. I can tell you, though, that I have been watching... I finally got myself a Disney Plus subscription. I cancelled Netflix and stuff, so I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to treat myself. I'm going to get Disney Plus, and I'm going to finally start trying to catch up on all the shows over the past, like, 5 years that people are like, oh, my God, Mandalorian is so good, and stuff like that. So I have been watching a lot of Star Wars, and I have to say I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan. I do enjoy it, and I enjoy different aspects of it a lot, but I'm not, like, a hardcore, like, Star Wars fan. How do you feel about Star Wars, Ray?
I love Star Wars. I love it a lot. It's baked into my soul and is definitely a key part of my personality, but that's fine to hear that you don't really like it. That's all good. That's fine. Everyone has their own opinions.
Well, no. I'm not saying that I don't really like it. I'm just saying, like, I'm not a hardcore fan.
Yeah.
I do enjoy it. And but I will say that there are different parts and different Star Wars media that I enjoy way more than I enjoy others.
I will say,
like, for example,
go for it.
I love Rogue One.
Yes.
I think it's a fantastic movie. Even as a standalone movie, ignoring the rest of all of the other Star Wars movies, fantastic movie. It didn't need to be part of anything else, but it was only made better by the fact that it was. Mm. Whereas there's other ones that I've watched that I just like, you know what? Even taking into account plus points from the rest of the Star Wars universe, it doesn't make it that good.
Yeah.
Like, I recently watched Obi-Wan. Didn't enjoy it that much.
No. I haven't seen it yet. Why didn't you enjoy it?
I won't give you any spoilers. But I will say that it just wasn't my favorite.
Okay.
It just wasn't my favorite.
I will put the disclaimer that most of my love of Star Wars comes from the games and the books and select media. I'd say Rogue One is a big one for me as well. I wasn't expecting them, and they didn't need to go that hard, but they did. And I would love to see some more standalone stuff that doesn't focus in on the Force users aspect of the universe. It's such a huge universe.
There's so much more. Yeah.
And that's what I like about the MMO is my biggest one. Star Wars The Old Republic has been my addiction since it came out in 2012. So I love the exploration of the class storylines in that aren't focused on the Force users. You have bounty hunters and soldiers and assassins, and I found that much more interesting than anything Force user related. But I want to bring the conversation back to your Disney Plus shows. So Obi-Wan wasn't your favorite.
Yeah.
Which one was?
So what have you actually seen? You just mentioned that you haven't seen Obi-Wan yet, but what have you actually seen out of the Disney Plus shows that have come out in the recent, like, 10 years, 5 years?
I have seen four episodes of the first season of The Mandalorian.
Okay.
Well, I've been slacking.
And, yet you were making faces at me when I was saying, you know, I'm just not a hardcore fan of Star Wars.
Look,
and you're here judging me.
I have been burned. All right. I have been burned by episode 9. That kind of burned up all of my Star Wars stamina. It's still refilling.
The most recent 3 Star Wars, like mainline Star Wars movies, were atrocious. Oh my goodness. They make me so angry. Like, there were so many moments where I just, like, would throw my hands up in exasperation and just be like, why? And not out of, like, oh, I don't agree with this decision, but why would the character do this? Because it doesn't make any narrative sense. And, like, there's so many inconsistencies and, like, chop and changes about, like, you know, core attributes of the characters that if you're going to make a series of movies, like, why bother having characters at all if they're all, like, disposable in their own attributes? Like, it just, it makes me really annoyed, actually.
I'm not allowed to talk about it anymore. You know how you get when someone mentions Pacific Rim?
That's me. That bad.
Yeah, I can't. The three latest Star Wars movies and the Uncharted adaptation, I'm not allowed to talk about anymore. I've been banned, so.
Very well.
I will leave it at, I think that having multiple directors who were having a bit of a fight, apparently, using movies as their weapons, was probably not the best choice to leave that kind of going on. And it makes me sad because we nearly touched on some really, really interesting aspects of the universe. And we nearly divulged from the classic storyline of good triumphs bad, because that doesn't really work and doesn't really happen. But we nearly got a very interesting development at the end of The Last Jedi when Kylo holds his hand out to Rey and is like, come with me. And she nearly takes his hand. My God, I would have sold my soul for that movie. because it was interesting, because it was different, and it deviated slightly from the norm.
And it's no longer black and white, it's gray. And you know what's great about gray? Is that's the real world. Yes. It's relatable.
Yes, and being relatable is the core of a good story and a good character, because we need to be able to relate to aspects to be able to be invested in them. So I have folded 100%. My arms so tightly. I've just realized this is like a massive self-soothing thing I've got going on here. So I can't talk about these movies as much as I want to. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's okay. Ren, how do you feel about Jar Jar Binks?
Look, I think we thought the prequels were bad until we got 7, 8, 9. And now I'm like, you know what? It's not so awful.
So, okay. So this is interesting because my first movie that I ever went to the cinemas to see in person with my dad was The Phantom Menace.
Adorable.
And I really enjoyed Jar Jar Binks. And I still love Jar Jar Binks as a character. How old are you? Like, I'm probably like 8.
There you go. That's the golden rule. I didn't see the movies until I was 17, I think. And just was kind of like, oh. I mean, slapstick comedy is kind of prevalent in every movie. You kind of just cringe your way through it and survive. I can deal with, like, it's not my favorite. Like, cringe humor is a real turnoff for me, but when I get to actively terrible story writing and decisions like we got in 789, that's when I actively start going, oh, I'm okay, I'm going to write an essay on this. All right, calm down.
Have you written an essay about it?
The amount of times that someone on stream has asked me what I think, and I've been like, this is a great time to kind of rework my thoughts into verbalizations, and then it becomes a two-hour stream of me just being really angry. I haven't actually sat down and analyzed it yet, but I went to see the movie with my good friend Joko, who is one of my best friends on Twitch, and in real life as well. We went to see the movie together, and he says frequently that he didn't actually watch the movie. He watched me, because I was sitting there head in hands, like knees up to my chest, head in hands, just going, what is going on? They're actually charging money for this. This is that. I'm going to cut myself off there because I'm thinking about it.
So you did watch the first four episodes of The Mandalorian. What did you think about those?
I liked them. I liked them a lot. I've been very interested in Mandalorian culture from the early days of the Star Wars MMO. I played a Mandalorian in our Star Wars TTRPG campaign. And back in the day, I used to speak a little bit of Mandoa as well. So it was very, very annoying for me when The Mandalorian came out and people went, you just like Mandalorians because of the TV show. And I'm like,
I think it's probably one of the more interesting cultures within the Star Wars universe, because it's often at a very surface level portrayed as if the Mandalorians are the bad guys because they were at odds with the Jedi at the kind of the height of both of their powers. But the reality is a lot more kind of nuanced and gray than that. And I think that's really interesting. Like, I think the first real exposure I had to that was when I played through the Knights of the Old Republic back when I was still, I think I would have been about 16, 17 at the time. And that was something that I found really enjoyable. And you have a Mandalorian companion that you can get, or an ex-Mandalorian companion. And, you know, getting little snippets of insight to that and then being able to, you know, both interact with them and fight against them throughout the rest of that game. I always enjoyed those interactions. I found it really intriguing. So I did actually really enjoy that kind of investigation into a little bit more of the Mandalorian culture, as it were, post-Empire. Because I thought that was pretty
definitely
cool.
Definitely. I think they're one of the more developed factions within the Star Wars universe, and there's a good reason for it. And they're very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. And I like the format of the show. And I liked the bits of it that I saw. I found it to be a bit of an exploration into other cultures in Star Wars that we hadn't seen before, like the Jawas. And actually being inside a sandcrawler for the first time was,
yeah,
like, I was freaking out because I'm like, this is so cool.
I think that's one of the benefits of having like a TV show series instead of like a very closely refined movie, is that it does allow you to kind of indulge and expand upon the ideas of, okay, well, you've got all these different alien races, and we get little brief snippets about their lives. Like, you know, we knew from, you know, the previous movies that the Jawas live in these big sand crawlers, but we don't really understand, well, how do they live from those pieces of media, and like, how do they actually interact? You know, what is their, and like the sand people as well, is a big one that gets kind of unveiled a lot more, and kind of you get to learn a lot more throughout the Mandalorian as well, which I think is also really interesting as well. So yeah, I think that's really cool. I will say, without dropping any spoilers or anything, I actually enjoyed series 3 of The Mandalorian more so than the first two, because it was much more closely interwoven with the aspects of the actual culture and how that impacts the people within that culture, more than focusing on any individual, which I really appreciated and really liked as a world building and expanding that universe.
Okay. I'm going to have to go back and watch it again, I think. Cause that sounds like something that I'd be really interested in as well. And I kind of use you as like my canary a little bit. Cause if you like something, then I usually like it as well. If you dislike something, then I'm going to dip out pretty soon. I will say something I wanted to mention in terms of what The Mandalorian did really well in a very crucial aspect of story building is escalation of power. So in the main Star Wars films, we have these huge universal threats, right? Like planet-destroying starships, galaxy-destroying weapons. And that is a really, really hard kind of consequence to keep scaling up and be like, well, this is scary because X, Y, Z. This is even more scary than the last one because of X, Y, Z. Now there's two Death Stars and one's really big, and we're going to call it Starkiller Base. Which I have my own issues with. Starkiller, best character from the Force Unleashed series. Anyway, what I really liked about The Mandalorian is they brought it back to focusing on an individual threat and the consequences that individual threat could have on a small populace. And I'm talking about the episode, and I'm going to get the name of the droid wrong, where a small village is being attacked by an AT-T. And how menacing it was coming through the trees and how big a threat it posed. These have been throwaway enemies that have been used for set dressing or quick dispatching by the heroes or being squished by logs by the Ewoks, you know, like their threat level's been at like a 1. This episode took it to a 10. They were terrifying. Mm-hmm. They were menacing. And I loved that, bringing back to this really relatable threat of this village can't defend themselves against X. Do you have a duty to help them, or are you going to move on, kind of thing? And that was one of my favorite episodes.
I completely agree. And I think the idea of having like a power creep with with the way that different enemies or different scenarios rear their head can be a really big issue within long-running media. Because if you're always constantly trying to chase and raise the stakes, then it almost gets to a point where it becomes unbelievable, and also it gets to a point where it no longer has the same level of impact. And I think a really great demonstration of this is Supernatural, which I recently at the end of last year I finally finished watching all the way through. And I don't know if you've ever watched Supernatural, but there is a progression where, you know, you've got these new enemies being introduced like constantly. Like you've got the you know, your standard vampires and werewolves and ghosts, you know, in the early seasons, and then it introduces like the idea of like there being alpha versions of these creatures that are more powerful. And then you've got the demons, which are like super scary in the first, like a single demon is killing like whole towns in the early seasons. And then in the later season you've got the two humans being able to deal with, you know, dozens of demons at a time. And then, you know, they introduce the angels, which are even more powerful than the demons. But then at the later season, you got them dealing and fighting multiple angels at a time. And then you've got the Leviathans, which then are more powerful than both the angels and the demons. But then by the end of that, you know, they're killing Leviathans left, right, and center. And then they introduce, you know, and it goes on and on and on. And each threat then becomes like an escalation on the next, which then devalues the previous one. And I think it's a really useful tool to kind of take that step back from a writer's perspective and go, okay, well, instead of like trying to escalate things, why don't we reframe the threat? So it's still within the same universe and there's still the same, it's still believable. It still relies on that same suspended disbelief in whatever hypothetical situation it may be, but it reframes it in a way which makes it more scary without actually making the overall concept of this, whatever the opposition is, more powerful.
Absolutely. Bring it back down and make it personal. Because likely, most of the time a story is viewed from a character's point of view. And hopefully your character's your audience is connecting with that character and is invested in them. And when the threat to that character is very prevalent, that's when you get a nervous audience, and a nervous audience is an invested one. The second you kind of take the threat too large, it becomes like we can't imagine stuff on that scale, right? You know,
yeah.
And we sometimes don't want to, you know, a lot of entertainment media is made for us to escape, like when we might be facing some very real issues in that aspect. And it becomes very, I don't want to watch this because it's in the news every day. And so I've been watching a lot of Arrow lately, the CW show Arrow.
Okay. I've never watched that.
Season one is very good. Season two is where it shines. They did some very solid story writing. Season three, it's kind of fallen off its head a little bit. Season four is pure trash. And season five, now this was really interesting. And I was talking to Luton the other day about this, actually, because we discuss story crafting and stuff sometimes. I have never seen a show bring itself back like season five of Arrow. And it's such a niche thing. Like maybe a handful of people listening to this podcast know what I'm talking about here. Season five brings the threat back from we're gonna blow up your entire city to I dislike you as a person for a thing that you did to me in the past, and I'm gonna destroy your life about it, and then proceeds to go about very carefully dismantling this character's life through some very strong story writing and character development. And it brings that threat level back to personal. And it's just, it's really well written. It's really well shot. It's really well acted. You can almost see the actors getting their scripts and being like, oh, thank God. Okay, we're not talking about magic anymore. Oh, thank goodness. You know, there's some actual character development and growth and real world issues of like relationships and parenting and stuff like that, that people can relate to. And that's what we keep bringing it back to, is you have to be able to relate to the issues being brought forth in the show, because you know, there's a lot of fantasy that really struggles, I think, with far-reaching, oh no, the ice zombie army is going to reach the capital, but we've got fire-breathing dragons, so don't worry, I can't relate to any of that. So, which is also, you know, I'm sure we've talked about Game of Thrones on this show, but that was one of my major issues with the latest seasons.
Have we? I don't think we have. I've never actually finished watching Game of Thrones. I lost interest after about season three.
Leave it. Don't touch it. No. You're fine. Don't.
Yeah. I don't have any incentive to keep watching, knowing how notorious the ending is. At the moment, I feel strongly indifferent about the whole franchise. So now it's just like, yeah, I enjoyed what I saw of it, but I don't feel the need. I don't feel compelled to keep watching, so I'm not going to disappoint myself.
Very sensible. If you ask me, I think that's quite sensible of you. So that was our second point on the agenda.
That was, yeah. I just noticed as well that I still have in the document the Today in Time, because I think that was a segment that we did at the start of previous episodes. But the today, I haven't actually updated the Today in Time for this. So this is the Today in Time of our original recording date, which just FYI, for whatever date this was, I'm sure through Google you can find this out when this was originally meant to be recorded. But on this day in history, in 330, Constantine I dedicated Byzantium, Constantinople, now Istanbul, as the new capital of the Eastern Roman Empire, an act that helped to transform it into a leading city in the world. Wow, what a moment in
time.
That
blows my mind. That's too far out of my comprehension, because now I can just be like, ah, cool.
Well, let me bring this back to your comprehension. That day was also Nutty Fudge Day and Limerick Day as well. And I wrote you a limerick, Ren. Do you want to hear it?
You wrote me a limerick?
I wrote you a limerick.
I've never been limericked before. Let's go.
All right. Well, I'm about to limerick you. Be ready. Okay. So, there was a woman named Ren who lived in a cozy den. She woke from a nap and brewed a cap, and at last she'd found her zen.
I like it. It's very, very me. I'm invested in this limerick. The leading character.
I was inspired at the I was inspired at the time because I think you just shown off your new cappuccino maker on Twitter. So I think that was the motivation there. Yeah. And I know you have been enjoying your new coffee maker.
Yes, yeah. His name is Caleb. He is a beautiful little DeLonghi specialista. I love him a lot, and it is probably the only thing in my life I've ever committed to. So,
well, owning like one of those little machines is like it is actually a proper commitment in like maintaining and cleaning and looking after, because otherwise it just, you know, goes to the doghouse.
Yeah, he has a service date like my car. Like, it's intense. Yeah. Wow. He makes really good coffee though. So I can basically go out and get a cafe coffee the second I wake up. So that's very good. However, I have never in my life worked in hospitality. I've never been a barista. I've never had to make a coffee. It has been kind of a journey into me having to make my own coffee. My coffee art is not great. I'm going to send you a picture of my first ever attempt at coffee art. It might take me a little second to find it. I sent this to my dad, keep in mind. I was like, Dad, are you proud of me? And he just laughed because it was that.
Oh, boy. Wow. Well, look, I mean, the one thing I will say there is that you do have a decent crema. And that is the number one thing that you need to even start dreaming about making coffee art. Now, I have worked in hospitality and I have made coffees before, not in a cafe, but at a restaurant. And if there is one thing that Australians love is our cafe and coffee culture. Like, it is very important to Australians that we have a good coffee, and we love to make fun of other countries for having terrible coffee. Sorry, literally everywhere else in the world, but all of your coffee is underwhelming.
It's really bad. I'm sorry. There's probably a lot of our global listeners being like, you know, that's not fair. Finland drinks the most coffee in the world. Well, you shouldn't. You should come to Australia and have actual coffee. Sorry.
Well, I think Finland's an interesting country because they drink a lot of all of the beverages. Like they consume the most amount of coffee, beer, and also straight spirits. And that's why we have the term, have you finished that? Ren's face, like right now, as she realized that she was nodding along as if she was like, yeah, the Finns definitely do that, instead of, oh, Drongo just actually set me up so he could tell me a pun.
God damn it. I wish I could see the way my face fell at the realization of that. No, but yeah, coffee culture in Australia is definitely a big deal. I recently went out with my parents for brunch for Mother's Day on Sunday. And we were sitting in a little cafe. My parents have owned a cafe. My mum is a trained chef and they're both very accomplished baristas. My dad works in the coffee industry as well. And so I'm the disappointment sitting at the table and kind of talking to them about my coffee. And as we were doing this, I was watching the lady on the coffee machine. This is a big, big coffee machine, right? She can make 3 or 4 coffees at once. I've never been so impressed by a profession in my life. The way that she was managing the different orders, the different kinds of coffee, the different kinds of milk, and it was just constant. And look, I just punched the microphone. But she was just so constant doing it and just moving so professionally through her space. And then when my coffee was delivered, I just got a little cappuccino. I had the most beautiful coffee art on it, the beautiful little leaf on it. And I was like, she just did that like it was nothing. I would have taken a photo of this and then taken the day off because there's nothing that I can accomplish better than the little leaf on top of my coffee. And it's
look,
surprising.
I think you're selling yourself short here because I think this is a very nice phallic
image that you have sent me the Dickuccino
with your coffee art. The Dickuccino.
Yes. It was hazelnut flavored.
Oh, very nice. I don't really go big on flavored coffees personally, but I don't hate them. I've been so spoiled lately.
My dad, when he found out that I'd bought a coffee machine, he took it personally that I had no equipment. And that was the picture that I put on Twitter, is that he would just turn up at my house. And he still does this. He just turns up at my house randomly in the afternoon without warning me that he's coming. And he will just have boxes and boxes of coffee paraphernalia. And one of those boxes held all of these flavored syrups. And I was like, yeah, all right, get it up here and we'll try some different syrups. And I really like hazelnut cappuccinos have my heart at the moment.
Gotcha. I think my literal comment on the video that you posted was, Jesus Christ, are you opening a cafe?
What's really funny is that I now take orders and stuff for my D&D group and I want to get more into baking so that I can actually have little baked goods and stuff to serve them before the session starts.
That's amazing. I love that. I've never wanted to join a D&D group so badly in my life now, having heard that. I will say that to paint a verbal picture here for our listeners, if you don't know what this video is, Ren has her coffee machine. She's got her little milk jug set out. She's got little cups and saucers out on the bench. She's got her beans on display, couple of bags of beans ready. She's got three bottles of syrup, vanilla, caramel, and hazelnut. And multiple used cups of coffee, a dish rag, several long life bottles of milk out on the bench, and then I think a few boxes of tea in the background. Like, this is literally, if you told me this was a counter from a small cafe startup and not Ren's kitchen, I would believe you. It is. I love this because it ties in directly to my attitude to things. If something's worth doing, it's worth overdoing.
Absolutely. And hearing you paint that verbal picture, I'm like, wow, I really should have cleaned my bench before I put that online. Yes, I'm very, very lucky. And it's been something that I've wanted to do for a while. Since we've recently moved into this new house, I now have the bench space for it. So my poor cousin was out when all of this was happening. So he got home to just find that we had a cafe now in our kitchen. So I was like, well, this is the facts. I'm sorry. There's now a cafe on the end of our bench. And actually, I'm not that sorry.
Does he drink coffee at least? Oh, I was going to say, if he drinks coffee and he's got nothing to complain about, this is... Yeah, that's actually
one of
rough.
Those.
That's like,
I was gonna say, one of those bags sitting on the counter there is actually drinking chocolate for him. So hot chocolates.
Oh, bless! Yeah. You can make him a little hot chocolate, little baby Chino. Oh, that's cute. I love that. So I think as a segue into the next topic as well, because a lot has happened in the last 4 months since we spoke. How are things? Like, last time we spoke, you were like in the peak of your TikToking. That has, I feel comfortable in saying that has dropped off a bit. That being said, you have still been posting shorts, and it is worth acknowledging that I was late, 4 hours late to this recording, so much so that Ren has posted a short about going to the gym because I ghosted her. So you haven't completely lost your inspiration for short form content, but what else has been going on?
I've been enjoying the short form content for sure. So thank you for the content today. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I moved away from TikTok just because I just don't want to manage another app right now. And I do find it a bit clunky and a bit invasive. So I've basically moved to Instagram. However, the Instagram Reel editor is garbage. So I have been using the TikTok editor and then just uploading that to Instagram because it is so much better in every single way. It's basically like having a tiny portable Vegas program to be able to edit on my phone, which is where I've been doing a lot of work at the moment. It's a really effective way to make content very quickly and very, very engaging as well. At the moment, we have just released pre-orders for Tales of Ale and Chainmail to our Patreons. They cleared out all of my stock almost immediately. So I am now in full panic mode and I'm in contact with my vendors to make sure that we've got stock for when we do public pre-orders on the 27th, so in 10 days. So that has been a big undertaking. I've been working on Tales of Ale and Chainmail every single day since March last year. And that is working with 8 authors. I'm the main editor on the project, but we've had three artists involved as well, some other staff that have popped in from other areas of Sky Nation to assist and proofread and all that fun stuff. So it's a bit scary. This is our first big main release since 2021, and it's supposed to be the first of 4 this year. However, it's nearly June, so I don't know how I'm going to go for the rest of the year, considering this one took me 18 months. So that's the beauty of publishing, which is, I've always joked it has 2 speeds. This needed to be done yesterday, and this will happen in 5 years. So it just creeps up on you like that. So that's been taking up a massive chunk of my mental faculty at the moment. But the other massive news is that Her Crown of Fire got refunded and we're now going to completion with all of the rest of the episodes of the audio drama.
So to clarify for any listeners, it has been funded again, not been refunded.
I didn't get all the money back. I didn't pay all of my actors and then went, oh, hang on, you know, just a wee bit. I really need to make rent. Can you guys send all that money back? I didn't refund the audio drama. It got re-funded. So it's good. It's good stuff. So that means that we just created around 30 jobs again, which I'm very passionate about. I was torn up when we had to end it, but it was getting very hairy for me on my end in terms of finances, because I was starting to put up my own money, which was putting me at risk. So I had to pull the plug, which did not do good things for me brain-wise, and being able to be like, oh, we're actually coming back to this stronger than ever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to complete this project. There were actors who did lines for episode 12 and 13 that were never released. They still got paid for it, obviously, but they never got credited because there was never an IMDb listing for it. And the episodes never came out, such as yourself. You finally got lines in an episode and then I cancelled it.
Well, hey!
Yeah.
I know. I mean, it's not many, but hopefully there will now be more as a result in the future, which is wonderful.
There is more coming. So I'm like, yay. I'm currently working on post-production on episode 12. I'm writing episode 14. I also have a book allegedly coming out within the next couple of months, but I don't know how that's going to go because the reception to it has been lukewarm at best. The beta readers identified a lot of core issues that need at least reviewing, if not complete rewriting. So I've been saving up a bit of energy to try and get back to that because I was working on that for 6 years. So to return to it when I thought it was done is taking a little bit more mental fortitude than I thought it would.
I think that's a really tricky thing to navigate in the creative process, is going back and revisiting something that you'd kind of ticked off in your mind as, you know, okay, I'm done with this.
It's so hard.
It can be very tough, and especially balancing that creative energy with the actual realistic everyday motivation. It's a tough thing to navigate. That I don't think it's really hard to make an equivalence between almost anything else, like from a from a work standpoint. I think it's something that's almost unique to like a creative pursuit.
Absolutely, and It's been tough because the two halves of me are two halves of me have been at war with each other because I've got the stop laughing at me. I've got the creative director brain being like, we need to bring this out. We've put money into the production, so there's a debt that needs to be paid back to the company. So this book needs to come out no matter what, and it needs to make sales and it needs to make money. So I've got that very cold logistical side of me that's like, we're sitting on a big asset here and it's currently not generating any revenue. And the creative part of me has been like, put it in the bin, it'll never see the light of day. And so it's been really, really hard to kind of bring those two halves to an understanding. So I'm currently exercising neutral gin and I'm doing nothing, which is more productive than it sounds.
Well, sometimes you just need to have a bit of space and time to be able to process and, you know, kind of build yourself, you know, kind of build yourself up and get a bit of a run up to tackle those sorts of things. Like, there has been projects within streaming that I've lost due to like data and stuff like that. The whole thing about me being hacked last year that I had actively worked on, that I'd put, you know, weeks of effort into or months of effort into, which is by no means as much as like 6 years, but it still has taken me up until fairly recently for some of those projects to have the creative energy to set back down those pathways again and to work on them again. And sometimes, yeah, you just need some time to feel inspired to do those things.
Absolutely.
Again.
And just to kind of like tack a little context on here for listeners, as a full-time content creator, which we are both lucky enough to be, when you spend, you know, 20 hours or so a week on a project and then that gets lost, that is 20 hours that has not brought you any income. Or it could have been spent streaming. It could have been spent on other projects. So yeah, when you say, oh, it's not 6 years, when the majority of the time that I was writing the book, I had another job. So I have not lost out on as many productivity hours as the full 6 years would imply. Whereas you working on your projects last year, we're having to be very careful with what we spend our time on to make sure that we do, you know, at the end of the day, can pay rent and all that kind of thing. And then to lose it is devastating, not just in a creative aspect, but it's also kind of like, oh, this could have implications financially as well. And that makes it very, very scary.
Yeah, it definitely does. And yeah, I mean, it's a tough balancing act always. Like, I guess that's the big downside of being self-employed in any capacity is that, you know, if you're not working on something that is going to earn your money, you're not going to be getting paid. And, in one way or another, money is pretty important.
Unfortunately.
It's not the most important thing, but it really helps to make life better.
Definitely having a roof over your head and paying rent is definitely a hobby of mine. It's a bit expensive, but I've come to terms with it.
I'm very passionate about having electricity.
You're passionate about running water and paying car rego.
Oh, running water.
Luxury.
Oh,
I know. I'm sorry.
So good.
You can only really have one streaming service, right? But that's been a difficult one to weigh up as well. The December January lull went for a little bit longer this year, I think, and it's all picking up now, which is fantastic. But it's always just that little nip of fear. It's just always the little nip of fear that I need to stay humble. So I'm grateful for it. And it also makes me review all of my safety systems as well. So I've got a bunch of fail safes in place that, you know, as revenue's not coming in, I cut off this, cut off that, cut off this, just to make sure that the lights stay on and the rent stays paid. And there has been times within the last 6 months where I've been looking for jobs. So, and you've always just got to be prepared to do that. I think you can't stack all of your self-worth on this being your career, because if you then are in a situation where it's like, okay, I have no money, I'm not making the next rent payment, I've got to go out and get a job, and you let that destroy you, you can't. And that's a hard limit. And I wish I could be more gentle about it, because it's certainly something that I've struggled with. But no, them's the hard facts. If you've got to go out and get a job, you got to go out and get a job. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that you raise there, is that it is definitely a consistent reminder that you're not entitled to anything. And no matter how much of an audience or a pillar of revenue that you've built up or whatever it may be, that can all go away pretty quickly, whatever scenario, whether it's just inactivity, whether it's, you know, you're unwell for a little while, like it can, or you take a holiday. Like, I was looking at, you know, my finances for this year, and the month after I took some time off to go to TwitchCon, my revenue decreased by 80% for taking I think it was 2.5
and
weeks
to
off.
Go to a work 3 weeks thing off, technically.
To go to a work thing, which I, yeah, which is a huge amount of money, which meant that that month was the biggest month of loss that I made as a full-time content creator. But it really kind of highlights that concept that, you know, even though you have a lot of, you know, we're very fortunate to have a lot of core people that are cheering us on and are like, yeah, we're always there for you. That is very much like the minority of an audience. And, you know, there is going to be just people that if you're not live and if you're not there giving value to them, then, you know, there's no reason for them to financially support you. And that is totally, you know, yes, right. You know, that's totally fair. You need to be having value to them. And it's just one of the downsides of being in a live format is that the only way that you can create value for people is by being live a lot of the time.
Which is such a sink.
Really
such a
tough
sink. And I've been so sick this year as well. It's been a really bad year for it. I had, back at the start of the year, I had COVID. And then a couple of months later, I got really bad tonsillitis. And I don't, generally throughout a year, I will take a week off. And that is over Christmas time, because usually I'm with my family. Or there's just, it's, Christmas is a bit of a weird time on Twitch. So I would just take the week off and use it as a bit of an excuse, because it's just a weird time. You wake up not knowing which day it is. Suddenly it's New Year's Day. You're like, I don't know what's going on. So I just kind of sit around and eat cheese during that time instead. And this year already I've had, and with the move as well, I've had a couple of weeks off, and it's been very damaging, not just to revenue, but to viewership, and also to, I fall off the streaming bicycle very quickly. I forget how to stream if I don't do it, basically 3 times a week. I'll kind of come back to it and have lost like my filter a little bit, or like, I'll just be a bit, you know, not as snappy as I usually am with reading chat and stuff. And it's really weird. I've been doing this for a long time now, but if I take a week off, it's like everything just leaves my brain. So,
there is always an element of like having to brush off the rust. It builds up pretty quickly.
Definitely.
And I think as well, when you're interacting at such a high pace as well, like there's definitely a certain mindset and rhythm that you need to get into, and it's a practiced rhythm more so than just some innate skill or ability that you have. It is through practice and through repetition, and if you're not practicing it, it will slowly go away.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And just with a couple of projects that I can't talk too much about yet. Tacticon recently came out though, and I was lucky enough to be one of the hosts of Tacticon, but I had to sit. It was
That's
amazing.
So cool.
It was honestly very intimidating, but the staff behind it and my co-host, Gamer Zach, made me feel very, very comfortable and very welcome in the atmosphere, so, and into the space, which I needed. And so that was amazing to be asked, amazing to do it, but that was a lot of work the night before a stream, and the next day I just could not stream. I was exhausted. I hadn't slept very well, because after I do stuff like that, my brain is just buzzing, usually with really negative shit, like, oh, you could have done better, you could have done this, you could have done that. I'm like, thanks, brain. Cheers, bro.
For sure. Yeah.
And so, like, I did that. That caused me to miss a stream. There's been some other work that I've done in recent months that is covered by NDA that I can't talk about, but that is also, I'm working my ass off hours every night, and I then can't stream, but I also can't say why I can't stream. And it's a really difficult balance to strike sometimes. And I'm so grateful that this other stuff is picking up, because it's stuff that I personally am very interested in terms of publishing and voice acting, and more things that I can't talk about. And I'm so grateful that I get a chance to explore those aspects of my job, because voice acting is, you know, voice acting is great, right? Everyone wants to be a voice actor. Basically, every single person I talk to wants to be a voice actor. And I'm out here like, yeah, I get to do it. And I get to sit in a room with a bunch of other actors and they act at me. And I say, yeah, that was good enough. Or no, that wasn't, go again. And that's fantastic, but it's not streaming. And this is when, like what I was talking about before, is you've spent, you know, like 20 hours a week or whatever working on this project, and then it doesn't come out for whatever reason. And that's not time you've spent streaming, which is For me, that's my main source of revenue still. I won't presume to speak for you. Mm-hmm. But it's like, these other projects are fantastic. They're not streaming. They're not turning an income just yet. But I'm also yep. struggling because I can't. People are going, oh, you haven't streamed very much lately. And I'm like, I've worked so many hours this week. I don't think you yeah. understand that my job just isn't streaming sometimes. My core audience knows.
Yeah, it's definitely an iceberg situation where the live time you see is just kind of the tip of the iceberg of the work that actually goes in to actually making everything else happen. Because I think there's very few people that I know that are streamers that are just like a one-trick pony that just do streaming alone. And I mean, even just doing streaming alone, there's a lot of stuff that you need to do behind the scenes. But, you know, there's, you know, almost every other streamer that I know has got, you know, other talents or other, you know, aspects to their actual business side of things that they work off that is not mm-hmm. live as well, which is probably a good thing, but also kind of, yeah, is definitely not something that is visible to people as, you know, oh, you worked really hard on this sort of thing.
Exactly. So it might look like we're not doing much, but usually there's been stuff going on behind the scenes. And in this industry, mm-hmm. it's really, really common that we can't talk about it. Really, really common that we can't yes, talk about it.
That is true.
So it's been a time. That's been my creative energy lately. Mm-hmm. And
but there's a lot of really exciting stuff happening there for you, which is awesome.
It's all over the place at the moment. There's something I really want to announce about the audio drama, but I just like I can't because pens haven't been put to paper. So I'm like, dude, don't do it. Don't announce mm-hmm. it until it's done. Just sit on it. Just patience. I don't have a lot of that. No,
neither do I, but you've got to absolutely. Sometimes.
What's been going on your end of things before we wrap up?
Look, not a huge amount, honestly, besides just really trying to chip away at all of the different stuff that I want to improve. For me, you know, streaming is still kind of my core business, but I've definitely been doing more commission art lately, and you know, I've recorded several new voice reels to apply for different projects and stuff like that that have come up recently, which I'm, you know, cautiously excited about. And yeah, I don't know, like it doesn't feel like there's been a huge, like, any one groundbreaking moment. I still feel like a lot of the time I'm kind of banging my head against the wall, just trying to, you know, keep forward momentum a lot of the time. But overall, you know, things are still going well. I got to, you know, I'm coming nearly up to midway in the year now, where we are, and that was kind of where I'd said I would make an assessment as to whether full-time content creation is still viable, you know, basically like 6 month check-ins and kind of go, okay, is this still working out? And as of at the moment, I think coming to next month, which will be halfway through the year, terrifying, I should be able to continue to keep doing this. So that's great news. And yeah. I'm very grateful that, you know, I'm still in the position where I can keep on doing this stuff because I really do enjoy it. It is just such a wild, wild ride to be able to stream games and cooking and art for a living. Like, what kind of life is that?
I'm so very far removed from just general, like, day-to-day stuff. I've realized, like, all my friends are like, oh man, it's Sunday, I've got to go to work tomorrow. I'm like, you actually have to go somewhere? Well, that's weird. I don't have to deal with that.
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, like, yeah, you don't have to go anywhere, but it's like, well, okay, I don't actually really keep that heavily track of, like, the idea of a weekend, so I just work every day.
I work 7 days a week. You guys get days yeah. off? Amazing. You don't have to think about your job.
Oh, dear. No, I do give myself days off, or at least I try to. A day where I won't check my emails as often, and I'll say, okay, I'm not going to actually actively work on anything today. But I'll often still be, you know, watching Twitch, you know, looking out for trends, looking out for good games, good directories to stream into and stuff like that. So it never really ends, but I do give myself some respite at least. But it's, you know, it's fun. I honestly, for all of its downfalls, I'm very happy to be doing me what too. I'm doing, which
and
is
I think
great.
Remembering that every day is a very key aspect of staying humble and staying grateful.
Yeah, well, I mean, as ask anybody, including myself, I'm a very humble guy, very, very humble. I will tell you all about just how humble I am. Fig jam.
Okay, I want to end the podcast on that note because I think that's hilarious. So, I know we've still got stuff on the agenda, but you know what? We're gonna have to leave that for episode 4 because it's been an hour and a half.
Can you believe it?
I can. We talk a lot.
It's flown past for me. But hopefully it's flown past for the listeners
hopefully
as well.
So. Hopefully they're going, no, we're going to create some hubbub for a video aspect of this. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have to create some hubbub and hopefully we don't have to wait another 4 months for episode
hopefully
4.
Hopefully not. I am all moved house now. I'm getting back into my routine. It's good stuff. So if you guys would like to see a video aspect of this podcast, you can leave your comments on this episode on Spotify, or you can just at Drongo or myself on Twitter or in our respective Discord communities. Just let us know. Yell at us in our chats. Like, we'll take note. That's the beauty of being live streamers, is you can talk directly to us. Drongo, where can the listeners find you?
Well, if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter as at the Bloody Drongo and on Twitch as /Bloody Drongo. And Ren, what about you? Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter as at Renee on Twitch, and I'm on Twitch as /Renee Sky. Just trying to keep everything, under one hat these days. It's difficult.
Perfect. I mean, it's tough. It is tough to keep it all under one hat, but we'll keep this episode under one hat as we lead you out. Thank you for listening to episode 3 of Tea and Tales, and we will catch you.
I thought you were waiting for me to finish the sentence. I was going to say, yeah, next time. No, but you beat me to it. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
We will catch you.
Yeah.
There you go. Look at that synergy.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Have a good day.
Bye.